This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 30, for November 12th, 2005.
The live audience again.
Oh, we're back in front of the live audience, but this is a special audience because about three-quarters of this audience is podcasters.
Yep.
How many of you are podcasters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the rest are pod listeners.
How many of you are pod listeners? Yeah. You know, pod listeners are every bit as important as podcasters, although I think there is soon to be a one-to-one ratio of podcasters to pod listeners. We're at the Podcast Expo in beautiful Ontario, California, home of the truck stop or
Home of the freeway bypass.
Unbelievable place out in the Inland Empire.
And the sanitation conference next door.
And we're right next door to the Portisan folks. You know, we're at the Portable Media Expo. I saw the Portable Sanitation Expo. I almost went in and gave the keynote, and I think it would have gone over really well, frankly. Portable your passion. So this is a special edition of TWiT because we are, as I said, at the Podcast Expo, so we're going to talk to a lot of podcasters today on the show. But let me introduce our panel to begin. Patrick was here yesterday, and they've had to go back home to make a dining room set for his wife because they're having people for Thanksgiving. Kevin was a no-show because he's got 2.8 million. What the hell does he need to come here for?
Well, he's in some strange country now, isn't he?
Is he? Where is he?
I don't know. He's in Europe, I thought, somewhere.
Yeah, Dvorak's ignoring my email again. It happens
because he thought you were spam.
Maybe I'm spam.
He gets no spam, and he gets no Leo, and he gets no email
at
all.
I'm part of this spam thing, but there is a great cast of characters, including we're welcoming back Steve Gibson, GRC.com. We love Steve.
Who happened to be in the neighborhood.
Happens to be next door, practically, so that's really great. Doug Kay of IT Conversations is back also. Doug, it's great to have you.
It's fun to be here, and I only have one thing to say.
What's that?
Light pen.
He remembers the light pen.
The LPS 2, the light pen I did for the Apple II.
That was Steve's first product.
Yeah.
That's how I will always remember Steve.
So this is the old side of the bench right here. Me, Doug, and Steve.
Right.
We're the old folks.
The founding fathers.
And then, of course, on my to my left is Alex Lindsay, who's slightly younger, of the Pixel Core. We call it the Pimple Core. They're all so young. No, and thanks to the Pixel Core for making this possible. We're going to do a video again. This is the first time we've done kind of like on the road video
with the new cameras.
Did you drive all this down, or did you fly?
We drove it down.
Oh, yep,
it was fine. It was five with all the trucks.
Yep, that's nice. And to begin kind of our roundtable of podcasters, Digital Bill from the Wizards of Technology, an old friend and a great friend, and wearing a kilt in honor of Patrick Norton.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be playing the part of Patrick Norton today.
I think you do a pretty good job. You got a sledgehammer with you?
I think Mark has it over there.
How do you like my microphone?
That is the best microphone I've heard.
It's really good.
And the price was good for you.
The price was right. This is a Heil PR40 and designed by, I didn't know this, the former sound guy for the Grateful Dead, Heil Sound. Does high-end audio, and this was one of the prizes we won for being the People's Choice Podcast for the show or whatever it is.
The question will be, can it happen again?
Never. You know, I'm firmly of the opinion that the tech podcasts are on top now because that's who can get podcasts.
A tech audience.
But I think by this time next year, I hope it'll be a mainstream audience. Don't you think, Bill?
I do. I mean, we've been walking around, and the thing that was always amazing to me is how many people come up to us, you know, as a tech podcast, and they're like, well, it's the Wizards of Technology. We're not quite used to that. But some of the guys that came up and talked to us are people who have their own podcasts, the Raider Cast, the guy that has a podcast about didgeridoos, right, the Australian
instrument. I'd love that.
He says he knows both of the guys in San Francisco that play them.
The didgeridoo.
But
it's a small community, but powerful.
They're way out on the long tail, right? These are the guys who are, but there's an interest for that. And no matter what you have to talk about in podcasting, you have whatever your passion is.
There's somebody.
Somebody's going to want to listen because you're not the only person that likes didgeridoos. There are other people that do.
Well, in fact, Doug was telling a story about your knitting story.
Oh, yeah, I was. When Odeo was first getting started, I was in their offices, and we were joking about, someday there will be podcasts about knitting.
Yeah.
And Noah turned around and went to Google and put in knitting podcast and came up with two of them.
Yeah.
You know, one was Knitcast. I loved it because
Knitcast is good.
It was so perfect. It was, so tell me, how did you get started in knitting?
There was a Pearl one.
Wait. What do you mean Knitcast is good? You've listened, Leo?
He's a closet knitter.
I do knit. I mean, I haven't knitted lately, but I know how to knit, and it's very soothing.
Well, I'm surprised you have time for knitting.
I don't have time for knitting. That's why I don't. You knit when you watch TV or you're doing something else. And when am I watching TV or doing something else? Never anymore. So I could knit during Twit.
You look You look very comfortable there, Leo.
I am so comfortable with my Heil PR 40 microphone. I mean, I can do all sorts of things. The force is strong in this one. The mic is good, too.
Yeah.
So you said something that I keep hearing at this conference, Digital Bill, and I want to know what the hell it means, long tail.
Oh, the long tail. I don't
Everybody's talking about the frickin' long tail.
Yeah.
Is that
you don't have one?
Week? I don't. Jeff,
no.
I had mine removed, actually. It doesn't look good with the kilt.
You still have the bump, though, I noticed.
You noticed that? Okay.
Okay.
The long tail is the part of consumable stuff. You can probably explain this better than me, Doug, but it's you know, there's an initial high end of demand.
The early adopter.
The early adopters, you know, that are the first people to jump on to any
new thing. So we're the fat part of the tail.
This whole audience is our early adopters.
So it's kind of like a spermatozoa?
On the leading edge.
It could be like that. And then, that demand tapers off in kind of this, tail-shaped pattern. But I think Amazon were the ones who kind of discovered it through all their data mining and so forth, is that they have a larger percentage of their total sales volume come from those small demand things, but there's just so many of them out there that it adds up to such a large volume.
So the long tail really is important in an internet sense when you have massive numbers.
Well, and remember that we've all decided that the internet is now not a fad. Remember, the internet itself was originally a fad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think also that the Netflix is a perfect example of someone who's taking
Netflix
full advantage of the long tail, where a lot of times what you think of is, I can go get that at Netflix. I can't get it anywhere else.
Right.
And a lot of their business, their whole business model is based on the ability to do that.
So if Amazon didn't have every book, or Netflix didn't have every movie, there'd be no long tail.
Yeah, I mean, it was coined by Chris Anderson at Wired Magazine. And he did the first article, and he's got a book coming out about the long tail, which I'm
how
really
to have a long tail.
Yeah, exactly. But it was literally Amazon was his first case, and it said a physical bookstore has whatever the number is, you know, so many thousands of titles, period. And if a book doesn't sell a certain number a month, you're out of there. I know that. And
as do I.
But
there's nothing more depressing, is there, than seeing your book in the remainder bin.
What I want to know is, does every author go into the bookstore and look in the computer or on the shelves of their own book?
Of course we do.
Of course,
and I sign them, which is really lame because, you know, the bookstore says somebody's defaced this book.
I write Leo Laporte in mine. I don't know. But the idea is that only something like Amazon can afford to service the long tail, if you will.
Right.
To basically, they can do it by having essentially zero inventory and supply the things that will sell one a year.
Right.
And that there is a whole economy. And
well, print on demand will solve that, really, because then you don't even have to have a printed book.
That's
you
right.
You print it when somebody orders it.
Probably some of those titles are print on demand. Mm-hmm. So you have sort of two layers of it. Amazon doesn't even stock it, and it's not even available in physical print.
Those are the
ones
that says they'll take a couple weeks to deliver.
Right. That's Lulu's model, where they print everything on demand. You buy a book in Lulu, and it's printed when you buy it.
Right.
And they have such fast printers that they can print it instantly. Right. You know?
Well, and a lot of us, especially in the tech area, I think part of what makes podcasts so interesting is that a lot of us live in the long tail. I mean, I don't even consider going half the time to the bookstore to buy the book that I was looking for because I know it's not going to be there. I mean, I immediately just say, oh, I'm not going to find that. I just go to Amazon and I just, if I know what the name of the book is or if I know what the ISBN is that I want, I'm not going to even bother because I know that there's a 80% chance it's not going to be there. We live in that area, which I think is part of what helps fuel podcasting, you know, and a lot of the listening at the long tail because the information isn't
podcasting really is all about the long tail. There's no fathead at the
well. There are people who are trying to turn it into a stars and hits system as well.
I hope not.
But they're playing the high end and look at Leo. You're in the fathead.
I was just going to say, is there no fathead here?
No, I mean, if you look at iTunes and you look at the top 100, that's not the long tail, at least by podcasting standards.
But that's the problem, is by normal standards, everything in podcasting is onesies, twosies, really.
But it's, it's going to have its own curve. It's a power law curve.
And the presence of Amazon and the creation of the long tail, it does change the demographics of the physical bookstore, because now there's less incentive for them to have any obscure books.
So it actually kills the long tail in brick and mortar.
Exactly.
There's no more long tail.
That's right.
Which could be a negative, I suppose. I mean,
well, one, I was just going to say, one of the things that I'm hoping that that Apple sees from what Amazon's doing is the ability to really, you know, if you like this book, you might like this book. If you like this podcast, you might like this podcast. And the cross, it is the cross-pollination that's really missing in iTunes.
People who bought this also bought this.
Well, we're going to do that today, actually. That's one of the things we're going to do is cross-pollinate as many podcasts as we can by moving podcasters in and out. In fact, we'd like to thank you, Digital Bill, for joining us. And
absolutely.
Tell us where we can get Wizards of Technology.
It's my pleasure, and you can get it at wizardsoftechnology.com.
What do you do? I mean, I know what you do.
What do we do? We're basically geeks so that you don't have to be. Our whole mission is to make technology simple for people. We look at the news and explain it in a way, the stories that we think affect people, and we do the whole listener mail thing. People who have an issue or a problem with something, we try to solve it. So we're doing call for help, and we're doing...
It's great. I listen to it all the time. It's a great podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Bill. Why don't you stand up? Daryl, why don't you get ready to come on in here? And while we bring in another podcaster, I want to ask, this is This Week in Tech. We should talk a little bit about this week's tech news. And I think the big story is Sony caving. Well, first of all, there's actually been a number of developments since last we talked about the Sony rootkit issue. First, I have to say I was stunned in the USA Today yesterday. They finally mentioned it. And they said Sony CDs carry virus, which is completely wrong.
Because there is no self-reproducing behavior.
It's not a virus.
Which is a virus.
It's a security, potential security flaw, but it's not a virus.
Yeah, so basically they're lumping this problem into anything is bad is a virus.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, those of us who are techie know that we have worms and viruses and
What it underscored for me is
malware,
that the general public has no idea. I mean, all the tech community is up in arms about the rootkit, but I think normal people don't even know.
Well, and it is a virus sounds a lot worse in many ways. I mean, imagine
how do you
reading,
explain a rootkit to USA Today audience?
Not going to happen. But imagine reading in USA Today that Sony discs have viruses on them. I mean, that's a really bad thing.
Bad PR for Sony.
Well, yeah.
So we knew that they phoned home last week,
but
we found out that there was the first Trojan based on it.
Yes, there are actually now two. F-Secure has found a second variant of the first one, so now we have two. The idea being that there's a backdoor Trojan that deliberately renames itself $sys$drv.exe, and there's now a second one. By doing so, it pretends to be one of the Sony installed files, which Sony's technology disappears from the system. So the Trojan, a truly malicious backdoor Trojan, is using the Sony technology to hide from scanners and traditional tools.
That didn't take long, did it?
No, less than a week.
Yeah.
Hackers are getting so lazy. They didn't even bother writing their own rootkit. They just used Sony's rootkit. Come on, guys. You know, have some pride in your work. So Sony's given up.
Then we heard, and this is unconfirmed, 2 days ago, but I did see that MP3 copyright strings are in the code that Sony's installing,
so
which is a breach of the Fraunhofer copyrights also, and the GPL, because it's commercial software.
So they're stealing... Lame.
They're stealing the lame MP3 technology and installing it in everyone's machine.
How many people here hate Sony? No. A show of hands won't do. How many people here hate Sony? Sony baloney.
Oh.
So is Sony giving up? Are they going to take this stuff off?
Yeah, well, the word in the newspaper today is that they've said, okay, we are removing all this technology from the CDs.
Now, victory!
Yay!
We won!
The problem, of course, and the reason you and I are going to do this on Call for Help next week, is that it's still in all the CDs in the channel, in distribution, on people's bookshelves. I mean, so the problem is like permanently etched in history now.
And of course, if end users don't know what a rootkit is or that Sony's put one on there, they're certainly not going to go get Service Pack 1 and fix the problem. It's just basically a nightmare.
Now, but has the door been permanently opened for those Trojans?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, forever.
On any machine that runs one of these, now I know they're not going to do any more, but one of these existing enhanced CDs.
You can hide yourself for free.
And, you know, we don't know how many millions of machines it is, but it's presumably a large number.
I mean, it's really getting close to Sony needing to do a recall.
Now,
a class action suit is on its way.
Yes, three, actually. There's the government of Italy is classifying this. as breaking several of their laws.
Well, you don't mess with a pope.
There's a firm.
I learned that in a couple of Twitcasts ago.
There's a firm in L.A. that is a major class action law suing firm, and they're suing also. The EFF is now examining this to see whether this qualifies for them to take some action. So it's been a catastrophe, and hopefully a good object lesson for the rest of the industry that's thinking, hey, we need this, you know, we need to install DRM software too.
I think it's the best thing that could have happened, frankly.
I mean, you can imagine that within the organization there must have been some debate about this. So somewhere there's at least one guy.
Well, I don't think they're smart enough to have a debate over it.
I really think a lot of them. I mean, a lot of people just said, "Well, we're going to protect the CDs," but I don't think they got into how they were going to protect the CDs.
I think there was a
handful of people that worked that out, but I think the people that said yes, we're going to do it, probably didn't think of it. And this is a good wake up call for the record industry to know that this causes a lot of damage.
DRM good, stealing bad.
Well, and you can imagine too. I mean, it could have been worse had this not come out and been discovered. Other people would have done their own style of DRM, and you'd have layers of this junk installing itself in the system,
sure,
really destabilizing Windows. I mean, it doesn't need any help being unstable.
I've got the Sony rootkit. I've got the Warner's rootkit. I've got the Electro rootkit. Ridiculous.
And there is a report that I have seen that we haven't tested that actually that there is an installer for OS X as well. I mean, there's an enhanced. It just came out yesterday.
Content enhanced.
There's content enhanced installer for the OS X as well on some of the disks, on a handful of disks. They don't know which
ones.
Now I'm mad.
Yeah, no, I was not mad until this moment.
Yeah, PC users. Yeah, you can
stay away from my Mac.
Yeah.
Get what you deserve.
Wow. Well, there's an object lesson for record companies. There's also an object lesson for users. If you insert an audio CD or a DVD into your computer and it asks you to install something, don't do it. Don't.
Yeah, because you do get the pop-up EULA, the end user license agreement, and if you decline, you won't get rootkitted.
Now, I wonder if there was ever discussion in the boardroom at Sony, do we really have to pop this EULA up? I bet you anything they said that. Do we really have to tell them that we're going to do this? We don't have to tell them that, do we? They bought the disc. There's a shrink wrap license. Yeah.
And Sony executives have specifically said this: there is no contact made by this software with Sony. But we know now it's confirmed that this stuff phones home. Every disc that people play using this technology connects to Sony servers and reports what it is they're listening to.
Does it connect to Sony servers, or does it connect to the company that works for Sony?
I'll know that tomorrow because I bought one of these heinous things from Amazon, and it's at home waiting for me to infect myself tomorrow.
Well, that's something to look forward to. I want to introduce Daryl Shandro, who's sat down in the hot seat. We have a hot seat today. And Daryl, it's great to have you. I met you earlier at the Podcast Expo. And you're blind, but not podcaster. Are you a blind podcast listener? Is that right?
I am a blind podcaster and podcast listener.
Oh, you do a podcast. What's the podcast?
It's called The Blind Access Journal, and I am an accessibility evangelist. And it can be found at... Can I say where to find it?
Of course you can.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we all plug. You might as well plug, too.
BlindAccessJournal.com.
Okay. And one of the things Daryl wanted to come on is to talk a little bit about accessibility. Now, podcasts are accessible for the most part, aren't they?
Correct, yes. It's inherently accessible. If you're using iPod or Lemon, which is now called the Juice Receiver.
That's right. They had to drop the iPod. Everybody's got the cease and desist order now.
Yeah, and that's just came out this morning. It's juicereceiver.sourceforge.net.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're blind, you can use that as your podcatching client to receive podcasts. Unfortunately, iTunes is not yet accessible.
Yeah, iTunes is very bad, actually, at that. Difficult to use because your screen reader won't handle it, or what's the
right
issue?
What happens is there's a number of user interface elements. The way the program was designed, it thwarts the attempts by screen readers to go ahead and gain access to that software, and there have been attempts in the past to ask Apple to fix it, and no response
I can see it. It's hard for me.
Yeah, I know. It's little letters, yeah.
The whole interface confuses the hell out of me.
The computer industry basically doesn't consider anybody over 40 as existing. You know, I mean, I can't read half the stuff. Websites, I got a proposal for their web redesign, and these are young guys who are, you know, sending this to me. Great company, Archetype. But it's the font size must be 8-point. I can't read the darn thing. And so I'm thinking, ooh, I hope they understand that you need to make some big fonts on the website, because if it looks like this, I'm not going to be able to read my own website. So, and there, you also were talking about CAPTCHAs and how much you hate CAPTCHAs, right?
Oh, CAPTCHAs are a killer right now, because, you know, imagine that you would like to post a comment to somebody's blog or podcast site, or you'd like to sign up for a podcast-related service on the web, and you're going along through the sign-up process, you know, enter a username, enter your email address, enter your password, confirm your password, so on and so forth. All of a sudden, you come to type the characters you see in the picture. Well, imagine, what if you can't see the picture? You're stopped dead in your tracks right there. There's no sign-up for you.
I can see the picture, and sometimes I can't figure out what those things are. It's like, wait, is this an H on steroids, or is this a W?
I find it helps to take acid right before you use those things. It's clear as a bell. So now, I have seen some CAPTCHAs that have audible buttons. You know, you press listen to this CAPTCHA. Is that something?
No kidding. That's great.
Yeah, I think that's a really
good
solution.
Very cool.
I am essentially, at this point, that is the state of the art in providing accessibility to CAPTCHAs. It doesn't meet everybody's needs, specifically somebody who is deaf-blind. So I am asking industry to include the audio playback of the characters and go ahead and include a link to send somebody an email or call somebody and get some help.
Yeah, that's a great solution. So if you can't do this, press this, you know, press this button or mail us an email. We'll help you get on.
Well, it should be and. I need at least the audio playback
you don't want to waste time if you can do it.
Well, I would like to unfortunately say that Yahoo has such a alternative. You click a link and fill out a form and they promise to call you back, and about 90% of the time you never get a call back.
We can work on that too. Well, Daryl, I'm glad you came on, and you know, I know from doing radio for years that some of the most loyal radio fans are blind, and I know that that will be true for podcasting, too. And it's important for podcasters to remember that.
I would also like to, I've been trying to get this done for a long time now. I'm a user of Blogger, you know, Google's blogging service, and also a Gmail user. I would, you know, please, Google, fix your visual verification, add the audio link. We've been asking since February. And promises were made back in July on internetnews.com that this would be done in 1 to 2 months, and it's still not done. And there's no the worst part that really kind of frustrates me is that there's nothing coming from Google saying what actions they're in the process of taking to address the issue.
Thank you, Daryl. The podcast again is?
BlindAccessJournal.com.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daryl. Chuck Tomasi, why don't you come in here, and you'll be next in our hot seat. And while Chuck is getting situated, I'll bring up another news story that I thought was very interesting, a deal between Yahoo and TiVo. Did you see this story?
No. Yeah.
What do you think of that, Doug Kay?
You know, I haven't deciphered it entirely, but I think anything that helps TiVo, I'm in favor of, because I have two TiVos that I bought the lifetime for, so I don't want to lose them.
I have to say, I think this makes TiVo the number one player out there, and I'm not IPTV.
So they already had the ability to program the thing remotely.
Yes.
But now my understanding is, if I got it right, you can go to Yahoo's program listings and select a program that you want to record, and it will automatically program your TiVo to record it. Did I get that right?
That's right. And the mainstream media is also focusing on this as turning a TiVo into kind of a web TV. So you'll have email, you'll have some internet capabilities, but I think that's missing the point. Go ahead. What do you think, Alex?
I'm not sold. The problem is that I think that there are people who think that you know, everyone wants to do the internet on their TV, and there are people who think that everyone wants
to
watch video on.
You're following the wrong trail here. The point of this is Yahoo becomes a television provider. In order for Yahoo to become a television provider, what do they need? They need something in the home that links up to Yahoo. It allows you to record television programs, download television programs, and display them. What do they got? They got a TiVo box with an interface to Yahoo. Now Yahoo can go along, buy television programming, offer it as IPTV. It is a key.
So we're talking about a next generation TiVo that will have networking built in?
It's not really a next generation TiVo. It's a current generation TiVo.
Okay.
You've got Ethernet, you've got a hard drive, you've got Linux.
Right.
And now you have an interface to Yahoo. Yeah, okay, right now you're clicking the Yahoo directory
so
for existing television.
A firmware update.
They can download TVs. Right now, a TiVo will download TV shows from the cable only, right? Or from your television connection only. What if it could start downloading from the internet? That's the ultimate.
But forget about new content. Think of what they've done to the value of their on-screen advertising. Because they can put up an advertisement for Lost.
Click it.
Click here to record on your TiVo.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Or
what, I'll use it.
Or when you're going through the broadcast and you say, oh, look, there's Twit. I know that's not a television broadcast, but I can download it and watch it. And then, by the way, a little Domino's pizza button pops up and says, we would like to order a pizza while you're watching Twit today. And you ordered pepperoni last time. Can we do that again for you? I think this is a major development, and I think people are underestimating what this means. It's very good for TiVo, very good for Yahoo, and I think it is a major blow for IPTV. But maybe I'm the only one who does, because I don't see a lot of nods.
Well, I guess I look at it like I think that TiVo is, I mean, I don't know, what is the penetration of TiVo right now?
Well, it's not that big, but all of a sudden they might be...
Well, and financially, TiVo has been in trouble all along.
I think it's
along.
2% of the general television audience.
But it's in the 8 to 10, is that...
That'd be 10 million maybe, but the 2% is pretty small. That's
right.
One in 50 TVs.
Although it's not a verb. TVs, but I guess for me, and I think a lot of people who use TiVo, it's a bigger thing. I think probably one of my problems is that I don't, I watch
TiVo now has a compelling way to sell TiVos too. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is it's not based on the current installed base. It's based on making TiVo even more desirable.
I guess
TiVo with Yahoo TV. What's wrong with that?
My issue is that I think it's on the other side. My issue is that when we're looking at this, I'm looking at the installed base of the number of PCs and Macs and everything else, and the fact that I don't really feel like I need a TV to do anything. I mean, I plug my iPod into a TV.
Well, that's a good point. You don't, but the general mass, let's get back to that long tail.
I still do.
The long tail would sure like this, don't you think? I mean, you're an advanced techie.
But I would say TiVo in a lot of ways is still the long tail. I mean, the thing is...
It's easier than putting it onto your device.
But you can't get real TV without being a pirate, right?
I mean, right now.
IPTV requires you to break the law if you want the shows that are being broadcast.
Unless it's Desperate Housewives or Lost.
Okay, right.
But as that starts to pick up, the big question is, I mean, if, and this puts, maybe it puts Apple versus Yahoo, but I mean, the thing is that the iTunes model is that I don't need to, I don't need it at all. I can sit there and just click it. And I am so happy, I have to say. I've now had the video iPod for a couple of weeks. I don't need it. I mean, I sit there and I walk to work and I watch my little thing. I don't need that.
Most people, though, are going to want to sit in the living room, watch their television, and if the fact that they have a set-top box that is a computer, but they don't know it's a computer, that connects to internet television from all over the world, I think that's a big deal.
If the pizza is bigger than the screen, that's a problem.
Yeah, okay. We'll make sure the pizza is smaller. Chuck Tomasi is here. He is a podcaster with his own podcast, Chuck Chat,
yes,
but also a member of Friends in Technology. And I wanted you to, first of all, welcome to Twit.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
You had me on your show some time ago, and I'm glad to reciprocate.
Well, I appreciate it.
Tell me about Friends in Technology.
Friends in Technology is a oxymoron, actually. It's a tight-knit group of loose-knit friends. I mean, there's no commitment other than to have fun. That's the primary objective.
And it is mostly podcasters, though, yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Also,
how many different podcasts?
Six.
And tell me what the names are.
I have to look them up. we're good friends.
You got friends, but loose. And they're all here, by the way, in their fit T-shirts.
We're missing one.
Oh, all right.
We're missing one. Yeah. He couldn't make it to the expo.
Okay.
We've got behind me Kevin Devon from In the Trenches.
Love it. Yep.
And his co-host, George Starcher, is back in the throng somewhere.
Yep.
Further back in a trench.
We've got myself, Chuck Chat. We do Technorama. Craig Stepp is my co-host. We've got Victor Cahiao from the Typical PC User podcast.
Now, I like that because Victor's really aimed at the beginners and newbies and really helps them out. And I think that's a really great thing. Yeah, they won't listen to Twit, but they can listen to you. Yeah.
We've got Douglas E. Welch from Career Opportunities, the High Tech Career Handbook. Excellent advice for those in the high tech area. Mike Tech Show, Mike Smith was not able to make it. And Steve Holden, who's the extremely tall gentleman in the back from Tech News Radio.
There are a lot of little loosely affiliated groups like this.
Yes.
I was talking to a 14-year-old kid who probably, I think he had to go home, do his homework, but he has the Teen Podcasters Network, and there's something like 40 or 50 teen podcasters. No, I think it was 70 teen podcasters. And I think it's...
The product presentation will take place on the stage
my flight's leaving. I better go.
I think, you know, I didn't know we were doing this in the airport. I just think that this is one way that podcasters, what is the benefit of getting together in a group like that?
Our objective is just to have fun. We found that we were...
You don't... It's in the cross-marketing?
Yes. Or, yeah, it's the cross-promoting. Sales. We've got projects that are bigger than the sum of the parts. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. We did Server Room of Horrors, a Halloween special. Horrors. Okay.
Yeah, not, I know what you're talking about. Soccer Girl will be by later. Yeah.
We're working on a Christmas special. Right. We've got a weekly look back at all of the shows that we do, the six of us. We splice them together, make a 15-minute... You know, kind of promo. We call it retrofit, to look back at the week. And you know, just small projects along the way. Fit tips. It's come across something that belongs to the group.
You know, Adam Curry is there. Apparently some sort of feud going on. I'll talk about that in just a second. Mm-hmm. But Chuck, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. All the best with
much.
Fit and all the best with Chuck Chat. I'm going to let you get up. Tom Katz is here from at Audible.com, and we're going to talk to them a little bit about their plans for podcasting and Audible. But I just wanted to mention the... It was in Wired, and I don't know how real it was, but apparently there was a little feud going on between the organizer of this show, Tim Borkin, and Adam Curry, the pod father. Do you know anything about that, Doug, or do you want to stay well away from this?
I may have to recuse myself, being a pretty good friend of both of them, but let's put it this way. Politics has made its way into podcasting.
It's kind of unfortunate. I hate to see that
happen. Didn't take long.
No. And that's the problem. Now, Adam's got this pod show, which is a business, and the model, although it's not completely obvious, seems to be network of podcasts that will sell advertising as a network, support each other in creating new podcasts.
It's sort of everything. I mean, the important thing there is that they've got funding from not just any venture capitalist, but from Kleiner Perkins.
Not bad.
And Ray Lane and John Doerr are actually on their board.
So they have a plan.
They have a real plan. And I don't know what that plan is.
Well, that's the irony. Obviously, Ray and John do, but they haven't shared it with anybody else.
My theory is that this is much bigger than any of us think, which is my vision is... They're going to be the next NBC.
See, and that's what scares the hell out of me. I'm not sure I really want NBC or anything like it to be involved with podcasting.
Well, the challenge there is, you know, are they a fathead company? Are they a long-tail company? Are they both?
I can see the advantage, though, because if there is an NBC-like thing, it's going to bring in people to, I mean, new listeners that we're not going to be able to get otherwise. And so people who are not affiliated with NBC, you know, all of the little guys, you know, there's much basically it broadens the audience of listeners tremendously if something like that happens.
Well, but it's also divisive because what Adam did was he set up across the street a little mini expo. I mean, he did show up last night for the awards ceremony and he was very gracious. But I have to wonder if we need that kind of divisiveness in this baby community, this infant community.
Well, you know, money ruins everything.
Yeah.
Cindy Lauper.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and girls just want to have fun.
Yeah, so I think it's inevitable. We could have seen it.
So.
You couldn't have said exactly where things have come from, but there are competing interests, and I think we know that's going to be happening.
Hey, speaking of interests, I'm a big fan of books on tape. And one of the things I do all the time is listen to books on tape, and for a long time I rented them by cassette, and then along in about 1997 comes a company called Audible.com where you can download... these things from the internet, and it's changed my life. I love Audible. I've been an Audible member for years. And Don Katz is here. He's the CEO, a founder of Audible.com. It's great to have you, Don.
Good to have you. Good to be here.
Yeah. What brings you to
to have you here.
Yes. Good to have us here, having you here. What brings you to Podcast Expo?
So Audible decided to open up our platform and try to be as helpful as we could to podcasters by taking this 10 years of innovation, figuring out what it takes in terms of the user experience of what the file formats need to do to have a good experience when you're driving along listening to your audio, as well as some of the other bells and whistles which allow you to build businesses, you know, build a rate card, have verifiable measurement of who's listening, which as this industry evolves will get ever more important.
Yeah, you guys have credit for devising the first portable media player.
Yeah.
Before there was an iPod.
I give a talk here just admitting how early we really were, but you know, it was 4 years before the iPod came out, we were commercializing, and we had a wonderful audio player that held 2 hours of audio. It sounded as bad as audio could. It sounded like an answering machine that had bad things done to it. But, you know, people... we still have people who think of that as the audible sound, you know. Right. But
oh no, it sounds good. Yeah. Well, you're essentially MP3 with digital rights management built into it, right? I mean, on the Type 4.
Well, this .AA format does have an MP3 component that's that is optimized, but we also have two other codecs that the consumer can choose that are
four different codecs that you can choose.
Yeah, you know, 2, 3, and 4. Basically, you know, you can pick your quality level, and some people are still up on dial-up, so it matters to optimize it, or they have devices that don't have much memory.
I use Type 4 on all of the things, and it's about a 32 kilobit MP3.
Yep.
But the quality is better because you're optimizing for voice and so forth.
That's right. Yeah. And it tends to, we don't get any complaints. For voice, it seems to do the trick. Although I have to say in Germany in our operation, they must have different ears because there actually are consumer complaints about the level of quality.
Where Fraunhofer came from. They know their sound.
I have a question, Don. Is it true that you have perhaps the only independent Apple-compatible codec for DRM in terms of DRM that you can generate files for the iPod with their DRM that nobody else can do? Is that right?
Yes. At this point, the iPod's fully compatible with Audible.com and our subscription service and our RS-delivered content.
That's how I use it. Yeah.
And so you can also go to iTunes. So basically, commercially, the iPod will go to iTunes, where we're the provider of their spoken word programming, or it'll come to Audible.com, where you can get more of a subscription service version of what you get at iTunes.
They're also the only company that allows that can use iTunes with non-Apple players. I use my iTunes to move stuff to my Palm, which I don't know how you got Apple to let you do that, but it works great, and it's a really nice solution.
Yeah.
I would have thought that you would be threatened, frankly, by podcasting. If you know, one of the reasons I think podcasting is so successful is it's in a niche that's not very competitive. All podcasting competes against is the radio. You know, maybe the cell phone and driving, paying attention to what you're doing, or books on tape, audible books. And, I mean, did you not initially see this as a threat to you?
No. Actually, the original business plan, unrequited to some extent, had a world of produced programming that was
audio content.
They're free. It was just anything. And it was always in, you know, sort of part of the dream to have this layer of product of creativity, and we would be able to kind of bring people up into a paid universe,
but you wouldn't require them to be paid. You could offer free content.
Right. I was always thought to be it would be a world of free stuff, just because with the ubiquity of usage and devices and people programming their own listening time, we would just do better. So I've been waiting for it, basically, and I think I want to embrace it, and the tools are a first step, but I'd like to see an environment where people can, in the realm of creating multiplicity of revenue streams, use what Audible is as a premium service, as yet another channel for the best stuff. And we're already seeing interesting hybrids where the American Public Media, you know, the old Minnesota Public Radio, their podcasts talk about and drive people to the full downloads at Audible. And we see huge spikes in their revenue because and their downloads because the podcasts are making people, you know, they have value in and of themselves, but they're driving people to another layer, which is premium. And with your stuff, Doug, there's no question, you know, you could conceivably branch out in the kinds of things that Jupiter and other people are, you know, getting a lot of money for if you chose to, and then use the you know, the free channel for other things.
Now there's also something new this week for podcasters, is that right?
Yeah, so Audible Wordcast is this week is this application where we'll host for you. You want to set up commercial services. We'll set it up for payment systems. You want to be able to build a rate card because you know exactly how many people are downloading and listening. You want to qualify people, and actually, I mean, as a creator, you can actually, through a registration, find out where people are, what they've actually listened to. Does a long form work better than a short form? It's a pretty extensible tool that I think people will enjoy using. And it allows this a variable risk structure, which at some point the industry is just going to need. I mean, at some point, you know, some of the things, the way it works now, if you have millions of listeners and you're not prepared for that, the characteristics of the cost can drive you out of business real quick.
Oops.
We're working. Yeah, we were working with a magazine that we're about to do some podcasts with, some video podcasts, and they were like, okay, we're all ready to go, and I said, okay, so just so you know, we're talking about 2 to 10 terabytes a week. We just want to make sure you're kind of in the ballpark. And they were like, we'll get back to you. So, yeah, it's but the other thing is that it's starting to become less expensive to do as well.
Right. Bandwidth is getting cheaper.
Yeah. Now, how do you see the monetization or the revenue generation? How do you see that really entering the podcast arena from your point of view?
I'm guessing it's mostly ad supported for most people at first, just because we've found that. We are introducing original programming all the time, and because we've built up the trust with hundreds of thousands of buyers of content, we can consistently expose them to great stuff. Often we'll make it free at first, and they'll get habituated to it. But it's not as easy, I think, to that as with podcasting, to just have an audience that's growing and have people, even if it's local, wanting to create advertising there. I'm guessing that that's the primary.
Now, when you're talking about advertising, is it something where someone's giving you a slot and you're putting the advertising in, or is it something that they're doing their own advertising?
In the case of WordCast right now, it's really just a tool that allows for ad insertion elements, and you get the ads and you build the business. Right. We're just giving you the tool.
What about a podcast like ours, or maybe even like IT Conversations, that doesn't ever want to put ads in it, but would like maybe to set up a subscriber system or something like that? Is that going to also be possible?
Yeah, well, this tool, if you wanted to just basically start charging, it's ready for commerce.
Do I have to put a DRM in it?
You do have to use DRM. But, DRM in our world, our world of users don't know anything about DRM.
Right. I have to authorize my device and authorize iTunes to use Audible. I enter in the password.
Right.
And you do have some limits. Do you have a number of limits, a number of machines you can authorize?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a couple of computers, a couple of devices within different classes. And, it's usage for, if a large family or, teachers are using it in classrooms.
It's a pretty big number.
It's a pretty big number. It's not...
And you allow burning.
We allow burning.
Do you limit the number of burns?
Yeah. Theoretically, it's 1.5 burns. So it allows for bad media, every so often.
I've got a whole bunch of discs that are half burned.
Just half throw baked? Them away. Maybe. Yeah.
But, we do...
How the story ends.
Right. We do what we have to do to make the traditional content community feel comfortable.
Well, I understand
about
that.
It,
right? It, we're in a kind of funny position because I would like both to charge for it and to not have DRM. And maybe to give it away as well,
right.
And
but don't forget, one of the things with Audible's format is that one of the issues with most DRMs is it plays on a very narrow band of devices.
You play on everything.
And we're really playing on, between the iPod and the Palms and most of the Microsoft-based, MP3 players, it's pretty much, the market share at this point. So you're not really losing anything by using our format. I think our format is on more devices than anything but MP3, and MP3 isn't really commerce-ready in its native state. Right.
Well, we're just thrilled to have the support of Audible in the podcast community, because you're right. You've been doing it longer than anybody. You know more about it than anybody else.
Yeah, and for me, it's about the unleashing of more creativity. I mean, I think that the next great creators are out there and starting to make this on their own, and the professional intermediaries do serve a really important purpose for the culture and the industries they create, but God knows they're not, the be-all and end-all.
Well, and for knitting.
And for knitting. Somebody's got to support knitting.
Absolutely.
KnitCast. Thank you, Don. We really appreciate it.
Good
Don Katz,
here,
CEO, founder of Audible at audible.com. And as a longtime subscriber to their Books on Tape, I have to agree that the DRM is not onerous, but I think it's more philosophical than anything else for me. It's just I don't want to have DRM.
Well, and now that that's in his business model, he can't ever back away from it.
He's stuck with it.
Yes.
He's stuck with it, as would Apple be.
You're right.
In my speech this morning, you weren't there, I'll bet.
I was a little busy, yeah. Doing a radio show. I would have been otherwise.
I've got some issues with DRM and some other things, just fundamentally. And it came to me through an interview that one of our hosts did with Meg Horahan, the blogger, when we talked about what it means to put content behind any kind of restriction whatsoever. Now, this is something that's the choice of the creator, of course. But when you make content hard to get to in any way, you devalue the content.
I agree.
And that's because you can't link to it anymore.
Yeah.
You're not going to link to content that's only available through Audible. You're not going to link to something that requires registration. And therefore, it's taken out of the conversation. You can't excerpt it. You can't do all these things. So you've essentially ripped the value out of that content.
Well, and one of the things as you look at it from the software side of things, there has been a lot of There's a lot of different ways that people do that protect their software. Adobe had protected it in a certain way. And really, the reason that Photoshop is where it's at is because they shipped it with every scanner known to man. And They gave it away. You know, they made some money on it as they moved through it, but it was essentially free for me when I bought my scanner. But the thing is what's interesting is the companies who predictably were the best at protecting their software, and there are some companies that it was almost never a good crack of that software, are gone. Mm-hmm. It was the ones that were actually fairly easy to pirate are
Isn't
the biggest.
That interesting?
They have the largest installed base. I mean, there were companies that
steal
were 3D
book.
Companies that would brag to me how they were Electric Image was a good example, a 3D package that I used to use a long time ago.
You were a big pusher of it on DV Garage.
Big fan
you
of
sold
it,
a lot of copies of it.
And I was always a big proponent that one of the reasons that they had a hard time getting into it was an incredibly great 3D app. Or still is. I mean, but they've had a hard time going where something like Maya or 3D Studio has gone in a lot of ways. And I believe part of it is because they were so good at protecting the code. You know, Maya, you know, it's very, very easy, you know, to move that along. And they know that eventually you're going to end up in a place where you're making money, where you're in a big company, and you're going to have to buy it.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people, a lot of companies will not, they won't say that in public, but they'll be kind of like, you know, that's what's going to happen. I mean,
ironically, Photoshop and CS2 has now put a very onerous copy protection system in. You've got to do the thing that you do with Windows. You've got to phone home and get it authorized. What do you think? Do you think that was a bad move on their part?
Well, the stuff that we've been talking about with Sony, you know, Adobe's been doing for about 5 years.
Well, that's a good point. Every time you run Photoshop, even the older versions,
right,
it would phone home.
And you can take it out.
They didn't prosecute anybody. They never pursued anybody. But it just gave them statistics about how many pirated software.
Yeah, they just wanted to know what was going on. So they never actually done anything with it. But it was there, and people noticed it, and you could take it out. I mean, you went in.
It did those downloading off files.
Yeah. It was the,
right. No information is being transferred.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Just your IP.
Just who you are.
And the fact that you exist.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That's really, I think, what they were looking at.
Yeah.
Well, is this a registered copy? No. Or does this one serial number? How many copies are registered this serial number?
Yes, exactly.
83,000!
But the thing is that as they start to tighten that up, the real question is going to be,
does it hurt
when
them?
They start tightening up, does that start to open a window? Because right now, Photoshop is ubiquitous. I mean, when I talk about Photoshop on Tech TV, I assume that just about anybody who's serious about doing photos is going to have it, because right, they can either buy it or they can find it. You know, and so I just make the assumption that that's there. If I can no longer make that assumption, do I start showing GIMP on Tech? You know, do I start showing
something
GIMP
free.
Or
yeah,
something free or something,
yeah,
you know, easier, or Aperture or whatever it is? I mean, other things start to open up as they start to tighten it up.
So, Doug, you think we should always give away Twit without DRM and should always be free?
I'm saying is, if you want your content to have the highest possible value in the universe, you give it away.
Because but that may not be what you're optimizing.
Exactly.
But I think in this, what about this model? We always give away the audio for free, and then there's other versions like a video version that aren't free.
Well, in fact, we do a new thing on IT Conversations where we'll, if you want it fast, we'll sell it to you. So if we do a conference, we might deliver all of the audio from a conference for $100 a week or two after the event. Or it's going to come out for free one program a week over the next 6 months.
You're doing that with this conference?
No.
Something like that?
No. This one's going to be all free.
Really?
This particular one, yeah.
He's not charging for...
No.
Are you going to... But you're not going to offer it all at once. You'll
still
be the weekly download.
That's right.
Okay. So if you do... And there were some very good sessions at the Podcast Expo. If you want to get those, they will be available at IT Conversations.
They will be on IT Conversations over the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And but we did... it's been an experiment. We did Accelerating Change 2005. $24.99 for all 25 sessions. PopTech, which was a major conference a couple of weeks ago, we rolled that out for $100 for all of them, or you can wait and get them one a week.
And how were the numbers? I mean, not exact numbers, but were the numbers reasonable? Were there a lot of people that reacted to that, or was it a handful?
I can tell you, it's very low. I mean, it's an experiment for us. The only one we have numbers on is Accelerating Change. We got less than 100 purchasers.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, we didn't promote it very hard. It was,
right,
in fact, we tried to downplay it because we weren't quite ready technologically with the payment mechanism. So it's just happening, and we're learning.
I think it's a good model, though. I mean, it sounds very reasonable to me. People will pay a little bit for value added.
Well, that's why I think the New York Times has it backwards. They're charging for their archives.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, newspapers tend to charge for the archives. Today's stuff is free.
Yeah.
And
so
you think they should charge for today's stuff because it's more valuable.
Well, on that basis, they should give me the newspaper for free.
Right.
Deliver the Times to me for free.
And if you want an old newspaper, it'll cost you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they've got it backwards, don't they? And there must be some thinking behind that.
No, it's...
There must be a reason they do it, though.
I don't know. I mean, you think of the Times as being sort of the paper of record for the nation, and it's not any longer. Well, it's the paper of record for this last two days.
Consider your experiences that a link will go buzzing around the net with an article in the newspaper. Well, you want to read it because it's newsy right now.
That's when it has value.
If you're hit with like a forum saying, oh, no, you've got to log in and this is premium content, it's like, okay, I'll go find it somewhere else.
Right. I'll get the Reuters.
So perhaps their logic is if they do let people get in on the new stuff.
I think that's it. They get the promotional value.
Then they get connected, and it's like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this is a good thing.
I have bought a few articles, but rarely will I buy an older article. I guess they don't see it really as a revenue stream.
Don't people send you links? You know, there was an article about someone in the Times. Here's a link. Read it. And you just go to the page that says, just it's free, but just register.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I just can't be bothered.
Bug me not.
Bug me not, baby. Yeah. Speaking of bug me not, Joseph Klein is here.
A little biblical. I prefer Joe.
Joseph. Joe. He's an interesting business model. He does voice work for podcasts.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Well, I'm like you, Leo. I'm an old radio hound dog from the old school.
Listen to him. Hey, you know, give him the good mic.
Yeah, you know, I'm jealous. I'm sitting here. I've been looking.
Come here. Sit over. This is the Heil that I won.
Oh,
come here. Both come here.
Right. Well, play interstitial music now.
Oh, I started doing Christmas.
Give the man with the pipes the microphone. That's the key.
Hello.
Isn't that nice?
Am I on?
Can you believe how much better that is?
Oh, my gosh.
Great mic?
He sounds just like you.
I was jealous. I was sitting behind you. I was so jealous. And then you sat me down and gave me that little thing.
That is a great mic. And Adam Curry has one now, too.
That's right.
So we'll see if he sounds better.
I use a Rode microphone, the Rode NTK. It's a great tube mic made by...
A tube?
It's a tube. They call it a valve now. It's a tube microphone.
Valve. Wow.
Yeah, it's a valve microphone. It's being made by an Australian company called Rode, and I'm sure a lot of podcasters out there are real familiar with the Rode.
So do people pay you money to do voice work for them?
Not anywhere near enough.
No.
But they do.
Give me an example of the kind of thing you would do.
Okay, welcome to This Week in Tech.
Save that.
There you go, you got it.
That?
You could use that. This Week in Tech.
You know, I just bought, and we were talking about this earlier, the guy who does You've Got Mail for America Online, Elwood Edwards does for $10. I just bought it. I don't have it with me, but I'll email it to you. You can drop it in.
Here, okay. I'll give you a better one.
Okay.
You've got mail.
I had him record, "You've got mail, you twit."
Anyway, our company, we started a new company. I'm an old radio hound dog, as I said, and back in the 70s and 80s, I was the leading producer of commercials for record albums.
All the old
Casablanca Record and Filmworks
ads.
And EMI America, Capitol, Warner Brothers.
You did all those disco things,
yeah,
huh?
I sure
Donna
did.
Summer.
I sure did. I won three Clio Awards and four International Broadcasting Awards doing all that stuff, and it was lots of fun.
Summer is.
That's right. Well, we used Ernie Anderson on all those ads who passed away, as
the
you
late
know,
Ernie Anderson,
back
yeah.
in 97.
And his son is, of course, Paul Thomas Anderson.
As a matter of fact, next to ABC, you know, he did The Love. I think I did more spots with Ernie for Casablanca. He was their house announcer than any other production
People
company.
Probably don't know his name. Those of us in the
Ernie
business
Anderson.
Do. But they know his voice.
Do you know who his son is? Paul Thomas Anderson.
That's what I just said. Yeah, he's the director.
Boogie Nights,
He's also the one who did the Visa, It's Everywhere You Want to Be. He did
lots of stuff. He was great. But I left that business. I just got tired of it. I got tired. I was old school, and I dropped out of school. I got tired of it after doing 1,200 commercials. I just got tired of it, and I was kind of an old school dropout until recently. Late last year, I discovered podcasting.
So what does an old radio guy think of this new medium?
Absolutely fantastic. It woke me up. It sent me back to school.
See, those of us who love audio, and I know you're that way too, Doug, are excited about this because it's a renaissance of a medium that has really been kind of left by the wayside.
That's great, yeah.
Absolutely.
And now I'm hoping there are all these young people who are going to start doing audio.
I'm back in the bedroom. I'm back in the bedroom studio with my computer.
I don't know if I want to know that. Actually, you know who else works in the bedroom.
But my computer does more than $1 million recording studio that I used to own.
Isn't it amazing?
And so what happened was I went back to school and I learned digital audio. This was a few years ago. Kind of was getting interested and excited about that. Then this podcasting thing came along, And I said to myself, self, you know, there's a need for some good voice work out there. And people are amateurs. They are doing their podcasts and they're amateurs and they're not too structured. Nothing wrong with having a kind of a very professional voice intro. Very professional promo. Very,
it can make a big difference.
So we started a company. I have a partner named Bill Fortune, who's a voice guy and a former news anchor person out of Chicago, Illinois, and a nationally known disc jockey and voice guy. Yeah. And we formed the Podcast Voice Guy.
How much is this going to cost?
How much you got? You know, that's a tough one.
Do you pay by the word? Do you pay them by the minute?
You know, people are asking me that all the time. We're going to probably start with rates as low as $75. Uh-huh. But if you need three or four pages read, of course it's going to be higher than that. But
where do people go
to? www.podcastvoiceguys.com.
Cool.
And our website's under construction. It'll be up and running next week.
You better hurry.
Be patient. Yeah.
A few twits might be visiting.
Looks like I'm going to probably need a completely different server than the one I've signed up.
Hurry.
Oh, well, please don't go there yet.
Joe, thanks for coming by. It's really interesting to see there are a number of models for how this can work. The keynote address from Jason Calacanis, who is the guy who made $25 million selling Weblogs, Inc. to AOL, was a series of business plans that won't work for podcasting. Did you see that keynote, Doug?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Well, I like the contrast between Jason's presentation and yours.
Yeah,
well, that was the best of all.
We're going to swap seats right now and get the podcast network. You have to give it up. Oh, sorry.
Darn it.
I have to give up this one. Go ahead, have a seat. Tell us.
I mean, as much as, you know, Jason is probably well known as, you know, the aggressive guy in our community, the guy who's...
Makes the money.
He puts it out there and he does it, and you sort of love him and you hate him all at once.
His company, Weblogs, Inc., started in Engadget. That was, I think, what made him the most money was Engadget. Yeah. But there were a number of other blogs associated with it.
I think it's still the big one, probably. Yeah. Although his auto blog is really popular, too. But, you know, what I liked about Jason's presentation was he didn't hold back, and he said some unpopular things. Yeah, but that were true. You know, he's willing to say, he points out, you know, you're not going to make money doing this, and you're not going to make money doing that. You know, get used to it.
Right.
He's got $25 million. He can be unpopular.
The truth is, I kind of said the same thing, but in a little bit different way. I don't think people should be worried about making money.
Well, I think what he was saying, this won't make money, and you're saying, that's fine. This is what you said, this is what I want to do.
Right. That's why you do it.
For Twit, you know, we're not bringing in sponsors, and we're proud of it.
Right.
How are we going to be able to listen to your keynote?
I think we're going to podcast. I have to ask Tim Berkwin. He said that they are recorded, and I think I'm going to be able to put it up on the net. Do you guys have it?
I will have it.
Okay, well,
you know what we should do? That's right. Taylor has the video.
Kind of cool. Taylor went to a lot of the sessions, and what, you know, I respect him working, because a lot of organizers have said, no, you can't have independent video and audio recording in here. I'm going to do something with these tapes. Yeah. He let people in to do it.
No, he gets it. Tim definitely gets
great.
It.
Great. But so I think you're going to offer it. So what should we do?
We'll have it. Well, what we can do.
How quickly will you have it? Because I'd like to put it up.
Why don't we? Well, I have complete control over the sequence of releases.
No. Well,
so we don't have to do it.
I will be glad to link to you. So we'll work that out. I'll put it in the Radio Leo feed.
Page.
Radio Leo feed contains everything that I do, and it sometimes often cross links to other podcasts. Right. So what I'll do is cross link to IT Conversations from that. And we'll just talk about that. You just live down the road, so I can.
Cool.
Another interesting idea for podcasting. Podcaching. Have you ever heard of geocaching?
Geocaching.
I love geocaching. You seem like you'd be a geocacher, Steve Gibson.
My main tech support guy is like a fanatic. He'll like, wherever he is, he's called me on the phone and says, okay, put in this code. And so I'm his interactive web guy on call. It's like, Greg, where the hell are you?
In your words, Steve, what is geocaching?
It's this bizarre, serious community of people who, well, from my standpoint, in my words,
kooky,
who hide random little boxes of things like behind telephone poles and under rocks, and then they give the GPS coordinates and sort of make puzzles out of them, and it's just sort of a strange outdoor hobby.
Well, Sonny Portacio is here, and he is from podcaching.com.
Podcaster.
Podcaster.com. Kind of an unusual twists on this whole thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Sonny, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Sonny. My wife, Sandy, and I have done a homegrown podcast all about geocaching.
So you were geocachers before?
Oh, yeah, we're avid geocachers. One of those kooks.
I think it sounds really cool. And it's yeah. A way to use a GPS device. I mean, you have a GPS device. It's a way to use it. You get outside. Is it... The settings, though, where these things are hidden isn't always urban. Sometimes it's in the country.
Oh, you know, it can be anywhere. Actually, you're probably driving past geocaches all the time. They're out under bushes. They could be hidden in urban settings, though.
You just walked on one and you didn't know it.
Actually, there's one about 200 feet away outside the parking lot.
Is there really?
Oh, they're everywhere. There's 200,000 all over the world.
Oh, so these don't disappear. It's not like a treasure hunt where someone finds the treasure and takes it away.
No, the idea is anybody can hide one, and then you post the coordinates to a website. And then once the coordinates are posted, anybody can do a search. And if you went to the website and did a search by your zip code, you'd find there are hundreds around your home. And so really what our website is, our podcast is about, is covering all the things about geocaching.
Right. So is there any overlap between geocaching and flash mobs?
Flash mobs?
Flash mobs is, you know, all of a sudden, you know, 5,000 people show up at the same time in the same place because they got it on SMS.
There's
got to be...
But what is podcaching?
Well, podcaching, our site, basically we cover news, tips and tricks, tools of the trade, and so we're avid geocachers, and we...
So it's podcasting for the geocaching audience.
Exactly. We cover it for newbies and introduce people to the sport or hobby, and we also do it for the veterans too. We give them tips and tricks.
But there is a twist. Go ahead, tell them.
The one interesting thing that we've done, and more people are starting to do it, is instead of hiding the podcaches and having people find it using a GPS receiver, we're giving audio clues. So now what people are doing is downloading our files and then getting audio clues on how to find these secret hidden caches. And the reason the caches don't disappear is because the rule is once you find a cache, you're supposed to open it up, sign the logbook, put it back in there, and then put it back so other people can find it.
That's the kind of nice twist that makes it work, because if they disappear, then it's no fun at all. But this way, you look at the logbook and you see all the people who found it.
Exactly.
And sometimes you put new stuff in.
Well, yeah, the idea with the little treasures is you switch the toys. So you pick something out and you can put something in.
Well, and also, Greg will call me and he'll say, okay, go to this, you know, page on geocaching.com. Okay, now read me the hints again.
Yeah.
Because, like, he can't.
I'm here.
He's, like, been wandering in a field for, like, an hour. It's like, okay, wait, was the rock gray or white? Well, it says gray, Greg, and 1,900 people have found it already. I don't know what your problem is.
Oh, so that's the other thing, is that there's a list online of how many people have already
been. Exactly. It's a sport that's really easy to get into, because if you're just new at it and want to do the easy ones, you can. They rate them at different levels, but the hard ones, they can be tough.
And he'll say, like, okay, when was the last person? I said, well, let's see. 2 hours ago, someone was there.
Yeah.
So it's still warm.
Yeah.
Sonny, what's an example of a hard one? What makes it hard?
Well, you know, there are these things called multi-caches or puzzle caches. Let me give you a contrast. An easy one would be where you just look at your GPS receiver and it tells you this one's, you know, 4 miles away. So you get in your car, you drive to it, get out of your car, you realize it's 500 feet away, you track it down, and you look, you know, under a bush or whatever.
And it's on the other side of some fence you have to get around.
A difficult one, and there's two reasons why it might be difficult. Either because the cache itself is difficult to find, or the terrain is, like, really difficult, like underwater, on the side of a mountain. Things like that.
Underwater?
Yeah. They have scuba ones.
Scuba caches.
Do they warn you beforehand?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
And so you can see.
Oh, gee, I forgot my aqua lung.
Yeah.
bring wetsuit.
But a multi-cache or a puzzle cache is where you have to figure out several stages and use different things to finally get the final coordinates on it.
So what do you need to get started?
Really, all you need is a GPS, which they're about $100 now for the cheap ones, and a sense of adventure. And that's it.
And, of course, podcaster.com.
Podcaster.com.
Because without that, you're not really podcasting.
Yeah, with that, you've got everything you need.
That's great. Well, congratulations on the success of the podcast. And I think it's really, it's like the knitting thing. It's a perfect example of how this is long tail stuff. Yeah, and it's wonderful. Yeah, it's really great. Sonny, thanks. And where's your wife?
She's right behind you there.
Yep. Well done.
Yeah.
Don't lose him, okay? Next time you're out there. How many people like the Twit logo?
Yeah, I do.
Like that? Yeah, sure. It's a pretty good logo.
Yeah.
The person who designed it is here, you know.
All right.
Would you like to meet her?
Yes, yes.
All right. Dorothy, come on over here.
I was going to suggest that earlier.
Come on, Dorothy.
Come on, Dorothy.
Dorothy Yamamoto. Now, you know that we had a kind of, it wasn't an official competition, but it was, we asked people to submit logos, and we got a lot of logos. And I talked to a number of designers, including Laurie LeBeau-Walsh, who is also here. I don't know if she's still here, but Laurie told me, now, make sure you consider when you look at these logos that it might be in all forms and fashions. It might be a bumper sticker. It might be on a T-shirt. So don't make it too complicated. It has to be simple and have personality. And then all of a sudden, I opened this file from Dorothy Yamamoto of TigerBrightGraphics.com. And it's TigerBright.com, right?
Yeah.
And I went crazy. I thought, this is it.
I outed Dorothy on Thursday.
Yeah.
Did you?
She was at the Podcast Academy, and Digital Bill and Mr. Mark were there, and they were talking about great logos, and they singled out the Twit logo as being a great logo. And I said, you know, the creator of that logo is here in the Academy today, and she was trying to hide in the corner.
Totally unexpected.
She's also a member of Pixel Core. Yeah.
And it's, I have to say that the other thing about it, for the logo, it's not just that it looks cool, but it's well-designed. Like, we're having a lot of fun now that we got it in 3D.
3D, you can do it all.
But the thing is the design just continues to work, which is a good sign of a good logo.
It's a good logo, very simple. Now, tell me a little bit how it came about.
Well, you know, initially you indicated you wanted just a simple design up on the blog.
Right.
And so I listened to, quote, the client. And based on the theme of technology, I thought, well, what's very basic? Electronics symbols. So I Googled and found a site that had all these symbols. And I thought, well, let's find something with sort of a face.
Right.
And so this, I don't know what you call it, a bell gate or...
An AND gate.
It's an AND gate. Is that what it is?
Gate. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so it's inclusive. I like it.
And it had some association with sound. So I thought, okay, I'll go with that.
It's an AND gate.
Yeah.
And then we turned it on its side to make it the little twig.
Well, that was your...
But it does
your design.
It's
yeah, it worked. I thought, hey, a little bug, a little twit.
I mean, I actually think of that as being a twit.
It is a twit.
That is what a twit is.
And yeah. I'm hoping, with thanks to the Pixel Core, that twit's going to come to life down the road with little movements and its little feet are just scurrying around, little blinks and stuff, and you're going to see a lot of more stuff. We're also going to start doing twit merchandising so people can get twit. I have some great twit decals that you can put in your window. I sent them to you, Dorothy, so you'll be getting
that box.
Yeah, that box. Okay. It's coming, I promise. Okay. I sent it. I'm sure I did. There's a hat. It just really works in a lot of different forms.
The sound that a twit makes is a twitter. Makes a twitter.
Oh, that's perfect. There you go.
So, Dorothy, are you a professional graphic artist?
Well, I'm trying to get into it.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Isn't
that
great?
I retired from my day job a few years ago, and then the recession came on, so I couldn't get any graphic design work. So.
TigerBright.com, if you want the Twit logo designer to do your logo. We thank you.
Thank you
so much. It is just the cutest little bug.
You're welcome. Just love
it. And it fits us perfectly.
Okay.
All right. Now, let's bring in somebody. I want to read you something. This is from Paul McCartney. You heard of him, yeah?
I went to the McCartney show.
How was that show?
It was conservative.
Really?
Yeah. Went Monday night in San Jose.
He did sing a lot of Beatles
songs. I was in the seventh row. Oh,
he's old now, too.
He's our age. Yeah. No, he's older than us.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting on.
It was a low-risk event.
Yeah. Well, he sang Yesterday and...
I told my wife, I said, Yesterday's going to be in the...
the lineup.
No, what do you call it? The end.
Encore.
Encore. It'll be an encore. Sure enough. And they'll do Live and Let Die with pyrotechnics, sure enough.
Yeah. I've never seen... one of the great concert moments of all time for me was seeing Paul McCartney, and the lights go down on the stage, they bring out a stool, a single spot, guy on a guitar singing Yesterday, and that's the guy who wrote it. I don't know, maybe low-key to you. I didn't see this concert. This was a while
ago. I also saw him in 1965.
Well, that's different.
At the Cow Palace.
The Cow Palace.
Could you hear anything? Are ears still ringing from the screens?
No, screaming. That's all you
hear. Yep. Well, this is what Paul McCartney said about our next guest. He says, the band Steadman have the songs, the musicianship, the energy, and the enthusiasm to blow the top off any club, arena, or, if given a listen, have that rare ability, the rare quality, the ability to deliver. I like this band. Paul McCartney said that about Simon Steadman and his band. Simon, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Yeah, now, this is an example of... you were a signed artist, right? You had two records to your...
I've actually had two major label deals, and both imploded because of company mergers.
So you decided to go the indie route?
We went indie after the first major label deal went wrong, and then we actually came over to America. I moved over to America and got another major label deal with Elektra. which seems to be the kiss of death for us in major label deals, because they then Electra doesn't exist anymore. Right. Basically, we turned up to our label one morning, and we're like, where is everybody? Oh, they've been fired.
Yeah.
And we were like, so what's that mean for us? Oh, well, you're going to be going to Atlantic. And we were like, well, they don't know who we are, and they have nothing invested in us, so we want out. 12 months later, we got out. and then now we've gone indie again. And basically, I'm putting up our entire back catalogue up to this point, which is basically 150 downloads.
Free?
For absolutely free, for wow. No reason. My philosophy is give before you take. And I want to just give as much music away free. And then there's donations set up at the site, which is www.stedmanband.com.
Steadman.
That's right, yeah. And you can go to the site, get anything you want for free. It's CC licensed, do what you want with it. And we're getting so many hits as a result from it. We got Boing Boinged a couple of weeks ago, and that the hits at the site went through the roof.
I've talked at the expo to several different artists, Brother Love and some other people, who have really found success through podcasting, through PodSafe Music, through That's giving right. away music. Yeah. And it's really a model that works.
Well, I think that for a new band particularly, it's the only way to get your music out there to people. Because, you know, who's making the biggest fuss at the moment about downloading? It's the record companies, because they're losing out money. But the new bands are getting listened to and they're getting heard by people that probably ordinarily wouldn't hear them.
Right.
You know, so the record companies need to wise up to the fact that giving away music is not bad. And it's not about 30-second samples. It's not about one song. Give away a whole album, because the band are going to make money. I mean, we as a band made all of our money from film licensing,
touring.
TV licensing, touring, yeah. merchandise, yeah. but mostly film and TV.
Really?
Yeah. And never from record sales. You need to sell 250,000 records before you see any money.
Well, and that's also the classic model anyway for musicians, right? Even when they're signed to big labels, they're not making that much money from the
label. You got
to
tour.
You don't make any money from a record deal unless you're like Madonna, Coldplay, or U2. You know, that's the bottom line.
And even they tour. Even they have to make more money.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think it's just neat to see a band that's been signed and has a major label, had a major label, to also go this route. I mean, yeah, if you're young and there's no other way to do it, but you probably could have found another label. You decided not to.
Absolutely. I mean, we could have, but, you know, labels are in such a hole at the moment. Yeah. I mean, they're not signing, and they're not, and there's no real such thing as a publishing deal anymore. People don't really get publishing deals.
And that's the only way to really make money, is if you own the publishing.
Pretty
rights,
much. Yeah. What you got to bear in mind is publishing and record companies are pretty much loans.
Right.
You're pretty much getting a loan.
Yeah.
And with a record company, when you pay back that loan, you're still only earning a minor percentage of CD sales. So, you know, I was considering doing micropayments at the site, putting up new songs and doing like an iTunes just for myself. But I figured, first things first, give away as much as you can free. I mean, 150 downloads is ridiculous, really. But we were like, whatever, it doesn't matter. Let's just do it. And so we gave all this stuff away free.
Are you getting airplay, radio airplay out of this?
We're getting podcasts going. It's going crazy.
See, I think radio no longer breaks music, but podcasts do.
See,
break
the thing about radio is it's all restricted by advertising, corporate payola. You know, when we were signed, we were number three most added in the country. And we were trying to get played on radio stations. I was traveling around radio stations, playing my guitar. Basically, you know, you go and talk to people you might not necessarily like and try and persuade them to play your music, right? And we were like, well, are you going to play us? And they said, oh, well, Blondie paid us $4,000 to play their single. So they're probably going to get played and you're not. And we're like, oh, right.
And I used to, I mean, I
old
used to,
promo guy right here, right?
Well, not only was I a promo guy, I used to be a music director.
Right,
for
right.
an alternative
As
rock
did
station.
I. I've been
so,
a music right. director. And
so
I've
I was,
seen
I, my yeah. job was to, you know, it was when Nirvana and Pearl Jam came out, and that was my job, was to pick these bands. And there was an enormous amount of pressure. I mean, half the time you were picking songs because it was the right thing, but half the time we were looking at the charts. Like, who's going up? Who should we make sure
exactly.
that we're playing? Who are we going to be
it's
able to make a recurrent?
It's self-reinforcing. If you're not in that group, you're out of luck.
And it was all about hype, because what we would do is we'd be sitting here, and I'd be looking at, if you saw something moving on the charts, if it had a bullet, you know, moving up the charts, yeah. you were like, well, maybe I should put that in. And if you put it in and then reported that, then it would go faster. And it was all on the churn, and there were a lot of really bad songs that just got a lot of hype.
That's the thing. It's a lot to answer for all the crap music that's out at the moment that's getting airplay, you know? I mean, that's what's so great about podcasting, is that people can play whatever the hell they want without any restrictions.
It may be a crappy song, but at least you didn't pay for it, right?
Exactly.
Well, and I think that also the thing is that I think that the record companies are shooting themselves in the foot.
Oh, so much.
When they won't let anyone, like people in want to do podcasts. I want to do radio podcasts. Of new music, breaking new music, but you can't put it in because they won't let you promote their bands.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
And that's the thing that's insane. And then you have the you have the groundswell that's starting to start bands like yours starting to just say, you know, we're going to start bypassing that. Then you also have, you know, the MySpace.
MySpace has been amazing for us.
Yeah,
as
I mean,
well.
You know, they're selling hundred. You know, it's allowing the consumers to step in and actually start to choose what they want rather than, you know, being told what we're going to buy, you know, later.
Absolutely. And if a band loves you, they will support you. If someone just is a casual listener, they're probably not going to buy your record anyway.
Right.
So.
And there's definitely a lot of bands that if I heard their music and I, you know, was listening to it, I'd send them a donation. I'd send them money going.
I think it's going to be very good for Stedman.
Yeah.
Thank you,
for a lot of other bands. Yeah. Simon, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Go to Stedman.
Stedmanband.com, and it's STEADMAN.
Make sure you download all 150 songs.
Thanks very much.
Make copies for all your friends. Thank you, Simon. Really
take
appreciate
care.
It.
Thank you.
We have 2 minutes. We've been told that they're going to close the building, so we want to get MacCast's Adam Christensen sitting down here real quickly and say goodbye to him. And we also want to thank all of you in the audience for sticking around and being here. And also thank you so much for listening to Twit. We really, really appreciate the support. It really makes a difference to us. Thanks to the folks at AOL Radio. Who put our podcast on their podcast channel and also give us the bandwidth, because otherwise I don't know how I paid for this, at aolmusic.com. MacCast is one of my favorite podcasts. Adam Christensen is here. He is the MacCast daddy.
I love to hear that every time. Thank you so much.
And an early podcaster, flattering. You were one of the first few, yeah?
December. So I was kind of in that second round, I would say. Yeah. I wasn't right up there with the first round.
One of the many podcast celebrities I've wanted to meet and have met here. I was hoping Don and Drew would come by, and it's just been really fun. Hasn't this event
this
been amazing?
This has been an amazing, amazing expo. I'm just completely overwhelmed. And I've told so many people, you know, a year ago, this wouldn't have happened.
No.
I mean, to have this much capacity, you know, this much happened in a year, or less than a year, really.
It's my fervent hope that all the people who came here will come back, go out revitalized, energized, charged up about podcasting, spread the word, tell everybody about podcasts, maybe even make their own podcasts, because that's really what it's all about. You know?
Yeah, we got to get it outside of the early adopters, and I think we're on the cusp of it right now.
We're right on the edge.
Lots of tools and technologies coming available.
We've seen such growth in such a short period of time, and I think we're about to see, I think as fast and as crazy as it's been, we ain't seen nothing yet.
That's for sure.
That's what I think. Doug Kay, it's so great to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks,
Leo. From IT Conversations, always welcome. Twit.
And I got to meet Mr. Gibson.
Isn't he great?
One of my heroes.
Mine too. Steve Gibson of GRC.com. I'm glad we were in your neighborhood. We'd get you back on Twit. We're gonna figure it out, Alex, right? That we can get Steve on. We're going to use his new client. Steve's been writing a special IP telephony client specifically for podcasters that's going to give him full fidelity. And we'll be able to have him in effect in our studio.
When? It'll be free. I don't know when.
Soon. Oh. He's working on it.
I don't do when.
He doesn't do deadlines.
Written in assembler. It'll be small and fast.
Better late than never is the name of his protocol.
I think the key here is that Steve has never succeeded in learning any high-level language.
That's what it is, isn't it?
It's been assembler.
I just can't figure those out.
he writes in 8086 because that's all he can write in. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps, thank you for driving all this way, and you're bringing your crew and the board and your brother Joe and the gang. Okay, why don't we introduce the camera crew for a change? We never let them get any credit.
So we've got
they're behind the lens.
Yeah.
We've got Brent Bye. He's down here.
All right.
So you see Brent here.
Warren Hiramatsu, who is actually a longtime listener. He does video encoding down here in L.A. And is he a member of the Pixel Corps or just decided to step in?
He just stepped in. We started talking. We were talking about compression.
He's great.
So,
yeah.
we got into this conversation, and so he stepped in here. So, and then we have Kenji Kato,
who is always on camera for us. Kenji's one of our stalwarts.
He's one of our super techs within the Pixel Corps. So,
and he's got a big lens.
I'm not going to say anything.
Silence. So,
ladies and gentlemen, another Twit is in the can.
This is Week in Tech. This week. Let me introduce the table mates. John C. Dvorak. Kevin Rose. Patrick Norton. David Prager. Robert Heron. I got the Twit Army behind me. Microsoft poo-pooed it. Denied as a no problem. It's going on your system. It's a fool's paradise.
This week. This is amazing.
Got mail, you twit.